Hi guys, welcome back to the Just Keep Spinning podcast. This is Andrea.
I'm Andrew.
And we have a special guest today. Brett is in the house. Hey Brett, what's up?
Hey.
What's up guys? How's it going?
Good. So let's get things started here. So we're going to go ahead and start off with highlighting some events around the Valley. The first thing I wanted to highlight was at Bikini Lounge on Saturday. De La is going to be playing. So I messed up last week and I said De La is going to be playing yesterday, but she's actually playing this upcoming Saturday. So I'll for sure be there to watch her spin soul, funk, and disco and all the stuff that she works into there. What about you, Andrew?
What's up?
I have one event this week. Access Studios Lives. It's called We Want to Funk. Friday, July 27th, 9 p.m. until, it doesn't say.
Until they shut that shit down.
Yeah, until they close that mother.
He's like, Rhett's like,
come down, shut it down.
It's free admission until 10 p.m. And then after 10 p.m., there's paid admission. I'm not really sure. A couple of local dudes are all playing different things. 80s boogie, soul, some soul music, and then some funk and blues. So check it out. Check out their Instagram, Access Studios Live, if you want to.
And it's info. Access like the Access of Evil, not like your Access Hollywood or Access Insurance, okay? It's AXIS.
Yeah, I made that mistake when I was trying to look it up.
So just wanted to put that out there. And of course, Bikini Lounge, you can follow them on Instagram and get any upcoming event information. Brett, is there anything that you want to talk about coming up?
Yeah, definitely. On September 14th and 15th up in Flagstaff at Dark Sky Brewing, we're having a pop-up shop. So I work for Zia, just really quick, and we'll get into that later. But Zia Records is having a pop-up shop in Flagstaff, September 14th and 15th. That's a Friday and Saturday. We are currently in the process of moving one of our Vegas stores as well. So hopefully early September, mid-September, we're going to be opening up the Rainbow location in Las Vegas. We're always doing conventions. There's lots of happenings. Check out Zia Records on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter.
Everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere. Or ZiaRecords.com.
ZiaRecords.com. And also, are we scheduled this Friday?
Oh, yes. Thank you. This Friday night at 7 o'clock at the Camelback location, 19th Avenue and Camelback, we'll have Just Keep Spinning coming down. They just did Friday at the Thunderbird location up on 25th Avenue and Thunderbird, and it was great. It was awesome. Response was cool. You guys spun the hits. It was fantastic. So we're looking forward to having you guys again this Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. We're really excited.
Of course.
Another one.
Yeah, it's always good to share music.
Yeah, no, you guys, it was great. Definitely brought a cool vibe to the store on a Friday night, and we're hoping to do the same thing at the Campbellback store.
So. Awesome. I'm excited.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How's your weekend other than that?
It's been good. It's been good. Busy. Always busy.
You don't have life busy.
No, never. Never, ever.
Any pickups of any records that you've gotten recently?
I really like that new Kamasi Washington. If you haven't listened to that new Kamasi Washington is amazing. If
and
you're into jazz.
Jazz. Okay.
Yeah, it's jazz. Kamasi Washington plays with Thundercat. Thundercat's he plays bass in his group. Kamasi is one of the biggest up-and-coming jazz artists, plays saxophone. And it's a great record. It's even got like a secret record inside. So it's already a triple LP, and then it's got a fourth hidden LP that you have to cut open the inside of the record in order to get it.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
That makes me want to just go buy.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's really good music too. So yeah, I would definitely check out the new Kamasi. That's good. The new Adrian Young releases, we were listening to that a little bit earlier. Both of those new Adrian Young releases are definitely must-haves and worth checking out.
Yeah, and like we've said before, and I'll say it again, we wish we could play this music on here, but due to copyright, we can't. So we can't even find a loophole to play it.
We'll see. Maybe we can work something out where you get like 3-second snippets or something like that.
Exactly.
All you hear is just a saxophone. And then the end of it.
All right, that was good.
perfect.
New Kamasi.
And so at this weekend, Andrew and I were at the Swap and Shop that was hosted by Cruda Sundays, presented by Tres Leches Cafe, and it was at Grand Art House. And it was a pretty cool turnout. Had some cool vendors, open turntables. Some people played. Of course, Maggie was playing Mariah. E.T. was giving her some looks like, why are you playing that? But she was doing her thing. She did not care.
Right.
Who cares what you want?
Yeah, Do your own thing. Live and let live.
Exactly. So that was pretty interesting. We had people. And, of course, Jeff, he came through and...
Homie Jeff came through and played some fucking... I don't even know how to describe what Jeff listens to, but it's fucking dope. It's like acid trip.
Yeah,
it's just like it's dope. Some good stuff. It's just like I don't
like
know.
More psychedelic stuff.
Like a psychedelic, like yeah, psychedelic,
okay. Almost like
yeah, it's just yeah, new age psychedelics, acid. I don't know, fucking, how, it's fucking dope. That's all
about,
I know.
I'm about that.
Yeah. He always brings some crazy heaters, and I'm like, man, dude, what the hell is he playing? Because it's just nuts.
Hell yeah, but people are so like, good. Jeff's gonna come. When is Jeff coming? Where's Jeff coming? Because we want to hear Jeff. It's like I want to hear Jeff too. Right.
So, Jeff came through. So shout out to anybody who came through. You know. So yeah, I mean, it was you know, small record show. We're still growing it. So I think the next one will be sometime in September. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I think because it's going to be a little bit more focused on a little bit more organization, getting things out there. Because I think the word of mouth aspect is really important. And I always try to explain to people too that I mean, you can put on a show, but if you're not in the record stores yourselves and they don't see you all the time. It's not that they don't trust you or they're being ugly. It's just that they're a little bit more hesitant because they're like, you know what? I'm not sure about what you're all about. So,
totally.
Yeah, it's kind of just bringing that, like we said, community together. We always talk about that. So the next one, we're going to try to push it harder and have more stuff available for you. So we'll let you know when that is. And just because I forgot and I'm supposed to do it and I always forget, we did change our Instagram name from Arizona Records United to Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Just Keep Spinning, but he's like, I think he was too scared to do the whole I'm gonna report your ass and take this one because it's been an active just to Just Keep Spinning.
No, so yeah, the Just Keep Spinning.
Oh, that's an active.
That's an active.
Instagram
like, it's actually not active.
Okay, so but it exists with no posts or anything like
that. Well, same with Just Keep Spinning AZ.
Yeah, so they have like fidget spinners, and they're probably some fucking kid who's like trying to hustle fidget spinners, he messed it all up for us. And Just Keep Spinning Podcast is the new Instagram. It's just so fucking long. I didn't want it to be long.
Yeah,
but I guess, you know.
It gets to the point, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, but that's our email, so yeah. You know,
I think it works.
It works. It does what it needs to do, but.
You got to buy out that kid. That kid.
So I looked into it. I was like, well, if I just trademark Just Keep Spinning, I can go after this kid.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Hit him with the lawsuit. Hit him with the cease and desist. Aww. Yeah, exactly. Nobody cares about fidget spinners anymore.
I know, they're over.
They had their 10 minutes of fucking in the limelight.
So as we said, our new Instagram handle is Just Keep Spinning Podcast, and our email is Just Keep Spinning podcast@gmail.com.
Consistency, I like it.
Exactly, consistency. That's what we want in life.
iTunes, leave us reviews, please.
Yeah.
Subscribe.
Andrew's had stuff. A few, so he sounds a little, you know, a little urgent right now.
I need those reviews.
subscribe, rate, and review. We're on, you know, Stitcher. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play/podcast. We're all over the place, so you can pretty much find us anywhere. DM us if you have any questions. So
yeah, you always just can Google Just Keep Spinning Podcast. We'll be the first thing on there.
Yeah, and that freaking that meme that we posted, we did actually, so we created that.
I figured as much. I was like, I've never seen this before. I knew this was homemade. You guys, it was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably tell it's homemade. Funny. But
it was so good.
I know.
Those knee pads.
The
knee pads was definitely the funniest part for sure.
And I really do. So I take funny. Like those sinus too because and I use my per like.
Yeah, I saw that. You're like, I like when it's actually cold outside because I'll have my built-in sweater that I can throw down on the floor and use that as a knee rest for sure.
And that's true. And I'm like, someone's like, why don't you just squat? And I'm like, but then my back hurts.
Uh-huh. Oh no! I've gotten to the point now where. If I go somewhere where I'm going to have to dig on the ground, I will always try and look around for a milk crate that I can just pop a squat on and dig from there because, yeah, the knees by the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think because we're not old, but we're getting up there in age. You're 30. Yeah. See, and when they say when you hit 30.
It's crazy. I don't know what happened, but, like, I went from feeling like a spry young lad, like, 29 and being like, I can do anything. And then the second I hit 30, it was just like, what's knee pain, back pain?
Yes.
Like, what's going on? I'm coughing. I get sick regularly now. Yeah. Like,
you feel 30.
No. Yeah. My immune system has aged, you know, 50 years overnight, basically. And now I'm, falling apart at the seams, basically.
So. I know. That's true. And that's why I'm like, oh my gosh. So I really try to make sure that. You know, I'm prepared so that I'm not sore or hurt the next day from trying to find some stuff. So.
I've never gotten to the point where I wear gloves or anything like that.
That's for people who do like when they buy storage lockers.
No, I mean, like I've done digging at houses and stuff like that. I've gone into hoarder situations and like, I mean, we're talking the works, black mold, cat piss. I mean, just like anything and everything is in the air and on the records I'm looking through. And I still.
But you're 30 now, Brett. So you're going to have to
start thinking about this. I got to start considering it. In the past, I was like, oh, my immune system will be fine. Yeah. I can just.
But you're 30. You need to have the mask.
I know. I'm
going
to have to start wearing the mask, and I'm going to have to start wearing the gloves and the knee pads. And
Someone actually DM'd us, and let me see. I can't remember. I want to say his name was Diepix, and he DM'd us, and he was like, oh, actually, look what I'm on my way to do. And he DM'd us a picture of a crate, and he had his gloves and everything.
Goggles.
And he even had his goggles.
And knee pads, yes.
You never know, man, with the goggles. You might need it, definitely.
So, Bach mold's no joke.
It is, yeah. No, I always say that, too, where I'm, like, looking through records, and I'm like, oh, that's black mold. Like, I'll feel that when I'm 60.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, when my lungs are giving
up. Yeah, exactly. One eye stops working, fingers start falling off and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, that was the black mold from when I was 30.
So, and the person was Diepix, Diepix. So, thanks for messaging us that. That was hilarious. And I didn't forget, I'm going to send you that snoring hot dog recipe because you're asking for it. Well, he said he used to go to U of A.
Okay, yeah. There's so many good Soren hot dogs.
I was trying to explain to him, because he said he hasn't been there for a while, that how much it's grown, just everything. And that's insane. Yeah. And I was kind of trying to talk to him about everything. So it was pretty interesting. So I didn't forget about you. I'm sending you that recipe. Don't worry. So let's get into, so we did kind of go over this. So the number one song when you were born was I Just... Can't Stop Loving You by Michael Jackson, Syeda Garrett.
Yep. Michael Jackson.
I didn't really, when you said it, I'm like, I'm not sure about that.
So
song.
Many Michael Jackson songs come to mind immediately. You know, you can sing Beat It, you can sing Bad, you can you hear those songs and it immediately pops into your head. And that song, I was like, wait, why isn't that song coming into my head? And then we played it and it was like, oh, yeah.
Like, you're familiar. You're familiar with it. Yeah.
It's so definitely not a hit.
I mean, it was the number one hit of 87.
But you mean it's not one of those iconic songs?
I don't know. I mean, like, those number ones album by Michael Jackson is just like, it's like 30 tracks. I mean, like, he is the king of pop.
It's out of control.
Yeah, exactly. He couldn't release the song and not have it hit the charts. And I mean, and hit number one. I mean, it was just.
So if he's the king, who would you say is the queen?
The queen of pop?
Ooh. You better not say Madonna.
It's not the queen. Madonna's not the queen of pop.
I you know me.
Who
you
do
know?
You think it is?
Janet, duh. Janet, come on.
Yeah, what am I even saying? I almost. But don't you think that's a little brother sisterly? Like, you can't.
I don't give
you
a shit.
You want to break out from the family?
Their dad
at least?
Literally
Whitney,
just like
Tina Turner. I mean,
okay,
like,
Whitney. I will give you Whitney or Mariah Tina. Okay,
yeah, any of the other queens.
Okay,
I mean,
but
for sure.
Janet is, to me, she's in her own.
Why
thing.
Not Madonna? Do you okay? Do you like Madonna?
My mom raised me on Janet.
Okay,
not
so,
Madonna.
Okay.
And then what's funny? So my mom. Like, because, you know, Madonna, and I have mad respect for Madonna. I think she's done amazing things. I don't hate her music or anything like that,
for sure.
But I always tell people, like, I notice a lot of women my age, they love Madonna, which is natural, because your parents, you know, you listen to what they listen to. And my mom would listen to, like, the first Madonna album, but nothing after that. And I remember I asked her, I'm like, how come you only listen to this? And she's like, because everything after that sucked. And I was like,
that's trash.
Thanks,
it all went
garbage
from
can.
There.
So I just, you know, and the stuff that was out there, like Ray of Light, I thought that was cool. Like, I listened to that, but like anything in
she's
between,
somebody
just,
who like really reinvented her career like multiple times.
She's the original like blueprint for that.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I mean, she has spanned decades and decades, and Janet has as well.
They're in different lanes, to be honest.
True.
I mean, Janet's more of like the spectacle entertainer, where she's like, I'm dancing and I'm doing all this.
She's part of the Jackson family. So they come from a line of show business.
Their dad definitely ingrained that into them. So it's no surprise that they would dominate. And if you look at it from that sense, they did have a lot of obstacles, but. So let's get down, and I'll count down the top five from when you were 14, because like we were saying, supposedly the number one song when you were 14 is the song that defines your life. So number
this
five
one is no exception. No exception.
So number five is the I'm Getting a Divorce and I Hate My Man anthem, Hit 'Em Up Style by Blue Control. Which I'm all for that song.
No, I remember.
Fuck those men. They're trash.
Yeah, they I remember being at a dance freshman year and definitely hearing that song.
You hear the, I know. Definitely. In the beginning, like it just pops me out like that. Yep. And then number four is Someone to Call My Lover by, of course, Miss Janet. Yep. And number three is...
What am I talking about? Madonna being relevant. I mean, Janet right there. Yeah,
she's
exactly.
had hits in the 80s, mm-hmm. the 90s, the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So she just needs one more before this decade's
I
over.
Know. Oh, yeah. She's only got two more years. She hasn't had anything since 2010, has she?
Like, I think so. Like,
no, at least like chart-breaking sort of stuff. No, yeah,
she hasn't. And you should have gone see her when she came.
Was it great?
It was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. My daughter and my brother, it was their first concert ever. So it's kind of sad, though, because then you set the bar too high. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no
And then
here.
You're like, this shit sucks.
I went to a club and seen this local band, and they sucked dick.
For your first show?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. It's not really hard to beat my first couple shows. Like, my first couple shows were very easy to beat because they were just, like, local shows.
Little rinky dink.
Oh, yeah. The Mason Jar, just like, oh my yeah, God. Exactly.
Which is now the Rebel Lounge, right? Yeah.
The Mason Jar, I'm going to come here and sweat my ass off because they have a really bad air conditioning jar.
Yep. It's still hot.
It's still like that?
It looks so nice, but it's still kind of warm.
That's beautiful. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
yeah, it looks great. Put that shit on 70, please.
65.
Hey, they're in an APS area, so yeah. Like, yeah, okay.
So APS is the electric company out in Phoenix, and it is the worst
it's
electric
one,
company
there's two,
ever.
And that's the one. We're just not big fans of it.
During
so.
The summers, your bills will be thousands of dollars. I mean, it's just, it's
no,
insane.
No, I lived it. I'm telling you, it's awful. So if you move down here from somewhere else, ask APS, SRP, because you don't want APS. Number three is Where the Party At by Jagged Edge. Number two is Fallen by Alicia Keys.
That's another
and number one is
Baby Girl Put It On, man.
It's not that song, but it's that guy.
I'm Real by J-Lo and Ja Rule. And it's so, like,
your
we say,
girl J-Lo.
My girl J-Lo. Yes, I did a little mini J-Lo rant in one of the other episodes. How I have mad respect for her, but I just feel like J-Lo's a little bit of a fraud, but. That's just me. Don't want to piss anybody off because I know she has a lot of. Really
but we can all agree on Selena. We talked about that.
Yes.
And we can all agree on Selena as far as like that being her. I mean, it doesn't matter how you feel about her. She still killed it in
yes.
that role.
And I said that I agreed.
You did.
And
yeah,
I said
exactly.
I actually have nothing to like. I think she was perfect for the role. It had nothing to do with Selena because I do have met people that are like, well, I don't like her. She played Selena. I'm like, that's the stupidest reason to dislike her. I like have legit reasons to dislike someone I don't even know.
Right.
Because I don't know her. But
so, Brett, are you real?
Are you?
Yes.
I just realized that song.
Yes. I am real.
And this was
the
actually
walk,
the
way
remix. Because you said the original was on Ja Rule's album?
So the original, from what I looked up, was on Ja Rule's album. And then there's the remix that's on J-Lo's album.
And we even discussed that. I was like, I didn't realize she was spelling rule. Are you Ellie? I thought she was asking a question or something. So when it would come on and I would sing along, I'd be like, are you Ellie? Like, not even really realizing.
Who's Ellie?
Yeah.
Who's Ellie?
Who is she?
Christ.
So yep. So does that song, like you said, does it define your life?
You know, I suppose it has to by just law of the universe. Like, I don't have a choice in this matter. It has to define me. Yes, that song brings back tons of memories and stuff like that. I, you know, a lot of that era of music, like it doesn't necessarily hold up. Ja Rule's career doesn't exactly hold up anymore, and he's
and
not.
You're like, where's Ja?
Where is Ja nowadays? but you know, yeah, I mean, you put that song on and it immediately brings back memories. So.
Like, even if like me being a little J-Lo hater, even if it comes on, I listen to it. I'm not going to like, cause that's too, like, way I think you were 14. I think I was like 16 around that time. Yep. So of course, like, and with anybody, like I even see people that whatever song was popular at the time, that time of their life, doesn't matter what the era was, 90s or 80s, whatever. And they're like, at the time I didn't like it, but now I'll jam out to it because it brings back so many memories.
It was, you know, it was out there. It was, you heard it. And even if, like, by the time, you know, I was 15, I was like, to be honest, 14 and 15, that was not my style of music. I was getting into pop punk. I was getting into, indie rock. I was getting into all these other things, and that was even like first time I started listening to jazz on my own. And so I was not a fan of that music,
but it was everywhere.
But it was everywhere, and I definitely now pure nostalgia. I love it.
Isn't it weird though how like even if you didn't actively listen, you still absorbed it unknowingly?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what the heck? I know every single word. You know? Yeah. No. Exactly. It's now like, and I enjoy listening to it. It's funny how that kind of goes.
You have a different
circles.
Experience when you listen to it.
Yeah. Exactly. Definitely. Exactly.
So Brett, Andrew wanted to ask you, what did you want to ask Brett? He said ASL.
Yeah. So last night I was super tired.
So for those
sick.
Of you who don't know, ASL is age, sex, location. It's like an old thing.
No, it's a messenger, man. Yeah. The AIM days.
So when I was, like I said, I was sick last night, and I was like, oh, we're thinking of the questions to ask you, and I was like, trying to make a joke, and I was like, make sure to ask him ASL.
And then he just literally fell asleep.
I passed out because I was fucking tired. I think I ate a bad taco.
Yeah, he did. He had Taco Bell, and he was being grumpy, and he's like, just ASL.
ASL? And tell him, ask him something else. I just fucking passed out.
I am 30. I'm a male, and I live in Avondale, Phoenix, Arizona.
And were you born in Arizona, or?
I was, yeah. I born and raised in Phoenix. I lived in Tucson for a couple of years, but I've spent all of my 30 years of existence in the state of Arizona, and 28 of which specifically in Phoenix, West Phoenix. I've worked all over Phoenix, but yeah.
So and when you were growing up, excuse me, so did your parents like listen to music, and like was it really a thing? Because I know some people, it's like a lot of their influences came from their parents because I listened to it all the time. And some people were like, actually, no, like my family really wasn't a musical family.
I think we're kind of like right in the middle. And so like I first inherited my record collection from my mom, and we did listen to a lot of music growing up, a lot of James Taylor, a lot of Beatles, you know, kind of similar to a
standard
lot of people's,
stuff.
The standard pop stuff, Bee Gees. And so it was definitely in our household. My mom constantly would just turn the radio on. So as opposed to actually putting on a record or anything like that, she would put the radio on, and we would constantly listen to 99.9, just soft rock.
Delilah.
Yeah, exactly. Some jazz every once in a while too, but it was all freaking smooth jazz. And so
the KYOT,
the coyote.
I used to listen to that too to relax.
But no, I mean, music was always around. My dad he liked ZZ Top, definitely got into ZZ Top from a young age. Oh, I still like ZZ Top.
LaGrange.
You know what, you know.
Every time you hear that song.
Andrew literally
obsessed with that
threw
song.
His fucking head back.
That's exactly what I thought of immediately. Uh-huh. Every time I hear it at work or I'm driving, I'm like, hey, Brett.
I mean, that started there for sure. And then I was 13, and I was like, you know, wanting to get into playing music myself. My brother, who's 18 months, 2 years older than me, was starting to play guitar and stuff like that. So I started playing drums. I ended up playing, you know, drums in drumline for all of high school. And that kind of exploded, you know, just music being like everything for me. I didn't care about sports that much in high school.
So when did you start playing the drums? Like
13,
messing around with instruments?
13.
13?
I was 13, yeah.
So your brother
was probably like 12 when he started playing guitar and stuff like that. And I tried picking up a guitar and learning how to play it, and I was horrible.
I guess this isn't for everyone.
This is not for everybody. Yeah, this is, I'm a failure. I can't play an instrument. But I was like, I can keep a beat. I can tap my foot to the beat. And so got into playing drums, and I really kind of came from that. I just, you know, played on drumline for 4 years, and then played in bands on a full kit and stuff like that for starting about 14 through, I don't know, 24 or so I was probably playing music.
And so what I noticed, okay, so Andrew and Brett went to school together, so that's how they know each other, because they went to high school together. I did not go to high school with him, but what I did notice once I started meeting like his friend group and going that way on that side of town was it seems like a lot of people in your guys' high school were very like musically inclined, or they just kind of gravitated towards music.
I think we were all friends. Like, I think we all kind of linked together because of our shared interest in music. We would go to shows and see each other. We would, you know, our bands, if there were local bands, they all played together, you know. And so I can remember from a very young age my brother's band Sixpenny.
You had to bring up. Yeah, we told you you had to mention.
I'm curious if anybody listening to this podcast,
if they actually know who Sixpenny.
Yeah, exactly. If they happen to go to Westview during 2000 through 2004, remember Sixpenny. They would play with another band called My Dog Peter, which was a guy named Brandon Carnahan's band. And I was friends with his younger sister. And so it just kind of like everybody intertwined. Everybody, and I mean, it's funny how like that's still going on today in the record community. Everybody kind of knows each other. Everybody worked with somebody at some point or was in a band with somebody at some point. And that definitely started when I was, you know, as young as 14. You know, we you know, I think Andrew and I went to a couple shows together.
Yeah.
We definitely had friends that were in bands that we went and saw. I was just talking about the Deatrix the other day.
Yeah, the Deatrix.
The Deatrix and just like kind of getting into ska when I was 14, 15 and stuff like that, and definitely where that pushed me from there as well.
So. Yeah, because I always thought that was really cool because so where I was at the time when I met Andrew was really into hardcore music, which he used to make fun of me for all the time. I don't give a shit because it was my shit and I don't care. Hardcore. The hardcore scene though, at that time, this was before scene was a thing. So it was very, yes, I know. There were hardcore scenesters. But the thing is, I never really, like, I never had a clique. Like, they had their little clique, and I just would go. And I would go, like, with my one friend. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't, like, in their drama or whatever they had going on. I would just kind of listen to the band and, like, go home. But
I loved it. I mean, I was definitely going to a ton of shows, specifically kind of, like, hardcore and metal stuff when I was like 16.
Yeah, and I was like 18, so it was like the same era.
Exactly. Oh, and I would go to, I mean, that was my hobbies. You'd go to shows every single week if you could. You would, you know.
You would look at like what, and back then though, it's like you really had to work to see like who's coming, when are they coming.
It was MySpace, but even then it was, you know, pre-MySpace in a lot of ways, in the sense where like, you would have to figure out things word of mouth, and like it would all kind of coalesce. Like it would be like, what's everybody doing? It's Friday. Everybody's going to the show. Okay, everybody's going to the show on Friday.
I'm going to. I want to go.
I'm going to be there. Yeah. Exactly.
Or like you would go to one show and then you'd be looking like, okay, who's coming? Because you'd be looking at the flyers. Oh, man, and you'd have to remember because back then you're not like gonna bust out your cell phone to take a picture. You're like, you just really have to want to go and remember.
Yep. Flyering and postering, I think, used to be like extremely effective in that way, where like I would get flyers given to me and I would then determine if I was going to go to that show or not. Nowadays they're kind of litter, they're kind of trash in that regard,
like an obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, because everything's, I mean, you know, I'm staying up to date on things by social media, you know, I'm checking in on that sort of stuff.
I mean, same with us. So like, have you ever I know it makes me sad though, because then I think about like the infamous, you know, the Tommy Boy Street Team.
Oh yeah,
like totally. their story is so amazing.
Yep.
So but like part of that's lost because now we have everything's digital, which I'm not opposed to. I'm all for change and everything got to move forward, but I think we do lose a little bit of like personable kind of, you know, interaction.
I think even the idea of the street team, the idea that you could be anywhere in the world and, you know, you could be part of somebody's street team or something like that, spreading the word about that in your community. That was cool. That was really cool.
So were you ever like on a Sixpenny street team or anything?
I was part of the load in and load out crew. I was the
a little roadie.
Yeah,
dude.
Exactly. I think I worked in the merch booth a couple times too.
Were you all excited? Because you know when you're young and you're like, you have like these silly goals. Like, I remember I knew a girl that wanted to be a merch girl so bad, and I'm like, why do you want to be a merch girl? But like, it was totally her goal, and she ended up being one, and she was so excited.
Like, I was even like 20, and I went on tour with a band called North. Which friends from high school, but they eventually actually kind of got big. They got signed to Prosthetic. But I went on tour with them when I was 20, and we went through New Mexico, Texas, all the way through the Midwest. And I got to see so much of the country, but whenever I talk about this, where I've been like, yeah, I've been on tour with a band before. And I was like, yeah, I was the merch guy.
like, and they're like, oh,
they're like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, yeah, it was awesome. I got to see so much of the country that I've never seen before. And like, I got to meet a whole bunch of people and smoke tons of weed.
You gotta live my life.
It was great. Still one of my fondest memories was going on that tour with those guys. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. So let me just back it up really quick here. So when you were in high school, were you actually in a band? Cause I know there's the Sixpenny joke, but you weren't actually in Sixpenny.
I was not in Sixpenny. I was the roadie and the merch guy for Sixpenny, but that was it. Yes, I was in a band called Our Dying Martyr. with Cameron and David Crowe, and Cameron and David ended up doing the Irish Front, which got kind of popular there for a little bit. And then David's that ghastly EDM producer now. So, you know, they went on to do a lot of bigger and better things.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so we did, you know, it was like really bad screamo post-hardcore. I mean, it was
that was the era, though. You can't blame yourself.
Yeah, but there's good and there's bad, and that was bad. We had a song called Rock, Paper, Chainsaw. Any idea of how bad it was?
I have. Do you have this?
You know what? Someone does somewhere, but no, I don't immediately.
I was
going to
say, can we play that on the podcast?
Yeah, exactly. That'll be the theme song going forward. Just a license. Don't worry, guys. Yeah, exactly. Tons of breakdowns. It was bad. So yeah, I did that, and then I did Addy with my brother and a couple other friends. That was kind of like alt country kind of stuff. We were loving Wilco at that point, and so we kind of tried to do our own thing. Limbeck and other bands like that. We were definitely trying to do our own thing. So did that for a couple of years, and then other than that, it was just kind of playing with friends here and there. Like I really
like
didn't
jamming
do
out kind
jamming,
of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Just playing with friends down in Tucson, playing with a couple friends up here in Phoenix.
So why were you in Tucson so much?
I lived in Tucson for a couple of years when I moved down to go to the U of A. I went to the U of A for philosophy, and I was able to keep my job. So I started working at Zia in 2006. And so 12 years now. November will be 12 years with Zia. And I was able to start at 19th Avenue Indian School, but then I transferred down to the Tucson stores. And so I went to U of A for a year and was like, what am I going to do with a philosophy degree? I don't know.
You were so deep at that moment.
I was deep 3 years into college and was just like, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to stop. I don't know where I'm going. I don't want to be a teacher.
You're like, I need direction.
I need direction. And so I was like, I'm just going to continue working for now. And I worked at Zia just for a year when I was living down in Tucson, but I was dating my now wife up here in Phoenix. And so
shout out to Lindsay.
Shout out to Lindsay's. And then after a year, I was just like, you know what? Phoenix has called me back. I'm going to come back up to Phoenix. And so, yeah, moved up here and continued working with Zia and have two kids now. And so the rest is history.
Just living your life.
Living my life.
Being a grown 30-year-old adult with a bad back.
With bad backs and bad knees and allergies and all these horrible things.
Life. Well, so this is my question. When did you, because I mean, I feel like in 2006 there was a little bit of an uptick with collecting, but when did you really started noticing like people were pushing it, like coming in and buying records even more?
2006 was not, it was not back. It was 2006. I was able to, so when I first started for Zia, I had inherited my mom's records, but other than that, I hadn't bought many of my own vinyl, you know, records specifically. I had CDs. I mean, CDs was the...
They're so key.
It was my collection. Yeah, exactly. I collected CDs. I had hundreds, thousands of CDs. And so when I first started with Zia, I was... you know, broke college student. And so I could buy records for $2 a piece. And it really didn't matter what it was. I could buy, I mean, specifically at Zia in 2006 and 2007, every record was $2.
Isn't that crazy when you think about that?
It's nuts. It's nuts. I would buy, at that point, it wasn't just, like, I just wanted music. And so, you know, I wasn't getting anything new and stuff like that because, you know, repressing and stuff like that. There was no U.S. pressing plans releasing this stuff, you know, in the volume that there is now. I was buying records because it was inexpensive. I was buying records because it was cheap.
It was more cost effective than actually buying the CD. Because CDs were how much at that time?
$7-8 for the most part. And so, you know, I still bought CDs. But records really kind of took over from that point just because it was cost effective. I could bring home a crate of records every single payday, as opposed to buying
two CDs.
10 CDs or something like that. Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't probably until, I don't know, 2010 even, that I felt an uptick. I was in Tucson. And same sort of model in 2008, $2 records for the most part, just kind of, you know, an afterthought for us as opposed to an actual business. And I was kind of like, this one lady brought in her deceased husband's collection, and I don't know if he was a session musician or worked in a studio or something, but brought in this amazing jazz, blues, and just kind of rock and roll collection that I was like, okay, we need to rethink this. We can't just throw all this stuff out there for $2. This is too good of stuff. There's people that want it. And so I sold amazing records that are worth hundreds of dollars for $10 and $15 just because, you know, I wanted to get more than $2 for
it. Yeah, you're like, I know it's worth more than
$2. Gosh. I mean, like, I still to this day remember seeing UK pressing Beatle records, Parlophone, gold and black record labels. And we sold those for $30, and it was like, I can't
believe we made
those for
$30. Did you get anything? Were you able eventually?
I bought a couple of those myself. And those are still in my collection, and those are records that are worth hundreds of dollars. And so, you know, but at that point, you know, it's funny because internationally collecting never went out of style. There's always people that collected, even in Arizona, there were still people that collected, and they were having the time of their lives because they were able to buy all these amazing records for just dirt cheap. But as a whole, I mean, it had gone out of popularity in a big way. I mean, people would just ditch their record collections for next to nothing. I think people were throwing away their record collections a lot of times as well.
Yeah,
so.
I'm pretty sure that I've heard tons of stories where they're like, if I would have known.
Yeah.
Or like, I just put it out on the curb.
Literally just put it out on the hot Arizona curb and it fucking melted away. I mean, it's just like that Heat Wave record cover, you know, where the record's actually melting into the sidewalk. I mean, it definitely wasn't popular at that point. And even like 2008 to 2010, I mean, I was putting out those records and people were getting excited about them. But it wasn't.
It was like just still like a niche thing. Yes. It was. I mean, I guess it is still niche, but it has its little bit more widespread. Spread now a little bit, I don't want to use the word mainstream because people use it in a negative context, but it's a little bit more, and it's not bad.
Today's day and age, today's, you know, 2018, it is 100% mainstream. 100%.
I remember going into Zia when you worked at the one on Indian School, and my daughter was a baby, so this was forever ago. I can't even remember how long ago this was, but I remember it. They had just, Nitro had just repressed all the AFI stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and you were telling him, like, hey, buddy. And they like, AFI, go pick that stuff up.
Yeah.
And I remember it was actually, so that's, okay, so this is my thing. So it was, I would say, cheaper-ish then. And I know a lot of the complaints that I hear people say, especially just about some record stores, is that they're like, wow, I used to be able to go in like 2000 whatever, and I'd be able to pick it up for $2 or $8, and now it's like $30. So. And I feel like people want to blame the record stores for that. Like, they think it's literally the record store is like this evil, greedy, like, thing. But it's not that, is it?
No, not at all. It's supply and demand. I mean, it's popularity. It's what people are willing to pay for things that really determines the cost of a record. I miss it, too. I really do miss being able to buy records for $2 a piece. But, you know, I also really like the fact that records are in, like, everybody is thinking about buying records. Specifically, you know, we've seen the rise of all these other, you know, record stores in the Valley. We've seen the record stores that are here stay in business because of something like this. You know, and somewhere like Zia has a lot of other things going on as well. But as we've seen the decline of CDs, the uptick in records have definitely, it's offset it. And so, you know, the idea that we're not struggling or, you know, trying to look for that next thing to replace the decline in music and CDs, we've seen it thankfully be picked up in records. And so, yes, it's unfortunate that records are expensive. It's unfortunate that, you know, what was a $3 record is now a $10 record. Just from this perspective of, you know, I want to buy $3 records. I can buy three $3 records as opposed to one $10 record. So, yes, in some ways, I kind of like, oh, man, what the days we had. But no, I would way rather more record stores in business. I would way rather have more people engaged in the collecting of records and the listening of music.
Well, I feel like there's been a lot of stuff that actually has been repressed that maybe you never would have been able to get because of the popularity.
100%. I mean, most of these represses that come out were private press, local records. And so, no one saw this sort of stuff. You know, it didn't make it out of the community that it was in. And so you're getting exposed to, on a international level, music that you would have never heard otherwise. And that, for me, is incredibly exciting. There's the diggers that, you know, there is a sort of, not entitlement, but like the idea
territorial
that...
Territorial thing.
Yeah, well, you found that record. You went to the Midwest, you went to the East Coast, you went to Japan, you went to Israel, and you found that cool local record, and you had it, and you got to enjoy it and experience it, and you got to pass it along to this close-knit community. And there is benefits of that, but I'm sorry, but the idea that more people would be interested in it, And like, you know, a key artist for me is the Rodriguez, you know, the idea that Rodriguez could blow up internationally, as opposed to just being, you know, locally popular in South America. And you know, with just collectors, is that's exciting. That's cool. That's cool to think. I mean, you think about all these soul singers, you know, Charles Bradley. I don't want to say that's directly connected to record collecting, but it kind of does feel like overlapping in some regards.
Do you feel the same with like Sharon Jones in a sense?
100%. Daptone, you know, a lot of those soul record labels, Coal Mine, you know, how much I mean,
we never would have gotten Amy Winehouse if it wasn't for Sharon Jones, potentially. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, Amy Winehouse, definitely the music itself extends beyond the format. And so it's not just the format, but it does lend itself to that. There is a sort of, you know, archival sort of, you know, digging through the, you know, the music of, you know, years past that is, it's special, and it lends itself to unearthing stuff that never saw the light of day or never, you know, wasn't popular with the mainstream, as well as, you know, pushing new artists to do something similar as well.
Exactly. So, and that's my thing too, with like going back to the Zia thing and not to focus on it, but I feel like Zia is really a staple here, especially in Phoenix. And there is other
years. 2020 will be 40
years
in business.
That's insane to
me. It's crazy,
right? Zia's older than us.
Yeah. And we were started by a guy. I mean, Brad Singer started Zia, and you know, tons of people throughout, you know, all over Phoenix worked for Brad Singer. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't, or not a day necessarily, but a week or a month goes by that somebody doesn't come to me and say, "Hey, I used to work with Brad Singer in 86, or I used to work with Brad Singer in 93 or something like that. And that's special. We still have people that work for Zia that work directly with Brad. And so that's special. That's cool, you know, to think that, you know, we're a local company. Yes, we've grown, and yes, we've expanded, and yes, we are big, but it doesn't change the fact that there's people that work for this company and people that care deeply about music and care deeply about record stores. And yeah, we're excited about what we do.
And that's what I think that people sometimes don't understand, because not that there was zero record stores besides Zia, but since Zia was such a staple and such a flagship in the Valley, it really helped keep that culture alive of music, and especially coming from the West Side, you know, there's still nothing out here.
Oh gosh, there's nothing. It's you know, it's a, oh, not a wasteland. I don't want to say that. Yeah. That's the wrong way.
It's
but
just,
like,
there's
it's
the
a
culture, like culturally, there's, yeah, it's just more, everything's more polished and pristine and new out here,
especially the further west you go in
the
suburbia and stuff like that. Absolutely.
So
yeah,
I know that location that's now at 19th and Camelback, it's jumped around a bit, but that one really did service the West Valley. I knew people that would always go to that location.
100%. I mean that's the first store I started at, and I applied there, and I was living in Avondale. I was living at 115th Avenue in Thomas when I worked at that location. And so that was my Zia. You know, I'd go there and I'd go to the Thunderbird store for sure, because you could hop the 101 up there as well. But yeah, no, those are, even though they're Central Phoenix, those were the West Side locations, because you could hit, those were the closest things to us. And exactly. So, you know, I'd go to Circles back in the day. I remember going to Circles and stuff like that, and Thrifty Joe's for a long time there as well.
RIP Thrifty Joe's. Did you see that RIP. It closed? Oh my gosh. So the thing was, I didn't know it was closed in my, okay, this is stupid, but my eyebrow girl that does my eyebrows is right by there.
Right.
So I went to go, and I had just went there for my last brow appointment. And I was like, oh, shoot, I think it opens kind of late today. So I went to go Google it, and it said closed permanently. I'm like, I think it keeps picking up, because remember how it moved in the plaza? So I'm I think it keeps picking up that old location.
Yeah, totally.
But then I started seeing, like, this Facebook link popped up and everything, and I was like, I texted Andrew right away, and I'm like, guess what just happened? Yeah. I was so upset.
I know. And even, you know, something like that, which was like a bookstore and like I know
a
for
Bookman's
a long time.
Esque.
Yeah, yeah. But a smaller location and stuff like that. But their record store in the back for a while there was amazing. I mean, it was something. And so, you know, I definitely will say that the West Side is hungry for something like this. You know, in a day and age where we have, I mean, I bought my first, not CD, but my first parental advisory CD at Target.
And what
and
was
so
it?
So it was Limp Bizkit, Significant Other.
Don't hate. Is that the one that had Roland on it? Or what were the hits on that one? Like Break Stuff or something?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What is Roland on that? Yeah. I think Roland's on Significant Other. Nookie is for sure.
The classic.
I put that on repeat.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, the West Side's definitely hungry for something like this. And you know, I can't speak for Zia entirely with something like this, but you know, the idea of opening up a West Side location for me in particular is a dream of mine and something I would love to do.
Yeah, because since you're a boy from this side of town, yeah, that would be I would think that would be awesome. Anybody that wants to open up something over here, I always say there's so much. People on the West Side love to spend money, and it's not like a flashy thing. They just like to live good.
They like stuff, you they know. Like stuff. That's middle class, I think. Is you know, middle you class.
Appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. You have enough money that you can buy your house, pay for your cars, take care of your family, and just enough that you can have a little bit of fun, and not enough fun that you can go buy, you know.
You're going to Europe or...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go on these time, elaborate vacations or you can, you know, have quads and, you know, adult toys or whatever you want to call them and stuff like that. You have, you know, $100 per payday or something like that. And that's when something like media, CDs, books, movies, that comes into play is that you have just enough to keep video games, you know, it keeps your family entertained and it keeps you guys, you know, going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like some people see it as a journey for themselves, like books and stuff like that. So that's so I pray that we get something because we moved from Central Phoenix. So we're used to having like all this busyness and then we're over here and we're like, okay, like what do we do?
There's Brass Armadillo, which is kind of cool if you just want to kind of go antiquing and stuff like that. Yeah. Look at like I love looking at toys and stuff like that too. That's
yeah, and we're big window shoppers. We don't have to go and like buy. It's just the experience of going and seeing neat stuff. So that's a thing for us.
It's something, yeah, exactly.
But we're definitely starving over here for something.
I'm trying, we'll see what we can do.
We'll see get what something we can do. In the works,
especially as like more. You know, CD business. I mean, Best Buy pulled CDs entirely. Best Buy is no longer doing CDs.
And they carry records now. It's just funny.
They now sell records, which is silly.
Yeah. Well, Target, but too. Do you know that Maryvale Target has a crap ton of records?
Oh, you know. Yeah, I mean, Target for a while there was trying to do full-on record sections. And I get it. That's because, you know, records are now they're outselling CDs. And so, you know, I get it in that regard as far as them wanting to get in on it as well. And artists and record labels, they need those big vendors in order to justify or to make money off that sort of stuff. So I get it. I understand it. And I don't knock the hustle, but you know,
there's nothing like actually going to a record store.
Yeah, no, I feel that entirely. And the idea that it's independently owned and stuff like that for me goes a long way.
So. Well, just like, I actually forgot to mention, we went to Crates on Friday night.
That's a cool spot.
Friday night, yes.
Yeah.
I like that spot a lot.
So we went to, which is in the Slope. So, we went made Sunny after Slope. Sunny Slope, exactly. Rapping for the Slope.
They're opening up a Little Miss Barbecue in Sunny Slope. If you guys never been there, that restaurant's amazing.
Where's the original?
The Little Miss Barbecue is on University, right next to Record High.
Oh, okay. Which is another cool shop. Okay, yeah. Which is we've been to Record High. Yeah, which you're the one who told us to go there.
It's a cool shop. More kind of high fidelity. Not high fidelity like the movie, but like
the audiophile.
Audiophile, thank you. Yeah, yeah, the higher quality stuff. You know, really clean pressings and stuff like that.
Which is exactly, if you know you when you go there, you know
you're buying a quality pressing. You're buying a clean pressing.
You're not gonna have to worry like, am I take this home? It's gonna skip or it's gonna be a little warping in.
And they're great guys too. They're really
they're cool super guys nice, shop, knowledgeable, sharing knowledge, and that's what we like because we go around to the different record stores, and you get you had an experience. A different experience at each one, whether it's because the customer service, the demo in the area, vibe, whatever it is.
For me, I mean, I like looking through records. I just like shopping records. And so I just like going and shopping whatever anybody's got, you know, because, you know, what could have come in is completely different at every store. You know, you're going to find something different at every Zia. You're going to find something different at every record store. You're going to find something different in every city you go to. So I just like digging. I just like looking.
And that's what I say about Zia. I always tell people, because they're like, well, it's just a chain. I'm like, yeah, but each Zia has its own personality.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they're all different. They all have managers that are passionate about music, not necessarily just records in particular, but just music and cults, you know, pop culture in general. And yeah, no, I completely agree with that every store has its own personality and has its own, you know, they just have the ability to sell different things. I mean, something's going to come in at the Mesa location that's not going to come in at the Thunderbird store and vice versa. You know, you're going to see different things at every store. And that's not just Zia. That's every record store. So
exactly. I agree with that. So when we were at Crates, there's Kale, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
Kale. He was saying that he used to dig all the time. And now because he's just kind of you know, you go through phases when you collect, like, oh, I'm just, some people are like, I'm just collecting, this is what I'm collecting right now. And then they collect that, and then they move on to collecting something else. He's really into soul, right? Or funk? Is it funk?
Funky, I believe it's funk. Soul, yeah.
Yeah, like funky. So, you know, there's like line, it like blurs. It's like,
I'm not a funky soul guy. I'm a soul funk guy.
Soul funk.
I like the soul before the funk. Okay? Get fucking straight. I like it a certain way. Eat a dick.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, he was saying that he's just been resorting to, because he's getting so deep into it, just buying online. But he's like, I feel like I'm losing my connection with my record stores.
Well, it gets to a point when you're buying, you know, especially if you pick that vein of something that you want, you know, I'm going to collect this record label, or I'm going to collect this, you know, era, you know, 81 and 82, you know, soul music from Chicago, you know, and so you can go deep and deep and deep and deep. And, you know, specifically in some of those big cities, you know, it's endless, you know, as far as what you can collect from, you know, that style of music and from those places. And so it does, it gets to the point, if you dig deep into those sort of collections, you know, where you can't, you're just buying stuff online because you're trying to complete that part of your collection. And it's all going to be online. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be impossible to find that in the wild. For me, I still like the hunt. I still like the dig. I still like the idea. I'm still hungry, for me at least. You
and
know,
even work in or in work.
Oh, God, I mean, like, I think that's why I've been in Zia for so long, is that I still get excited when I go to a store to look through their stuff. I still look through their books and their movies and their, definitely their records, to see what they have, because I'm still excited about what I'm going to find. I do buy stuff online.
So do we. And it's not that we're knocking it. No. We're just like, I think it's always important to support your little ecosystem that you're in, sort of thing.
That's kind of why, you know, as much as I do have, you know, like, I like gospel and I like soul music, and so I have gotten specific in some of the things I'm collecting. I like Groove Merchant and a couple of those other labels, and I have, you know, it's gotten to the point where it's like, well, not gonna find this, and I found it online for $10, so I'm just gonna go for it. I'm gonna buy it. But the idea of finding that locally is still,
and the thing is here too, it's like, we're not, you know, our next door neighbor is California, and that's a whole different ball game over there, and they have so much more over there that we don't. So I mean, if you,
I feel like we get the runoff to a certain extent.
I always say that we're in the shadow of LA. We're like the redheaded stitch.
100%. We're always, you know, a couple months, if not a couple years, behind what's popular there and stuff like that. So, you know, but we also get, you know, it's expensive to live in California. It's really expensive to live in Los Angeles County, and so I, you know, in Phoenix, and in particular, is, and why the city has grown so fast is because it's really expensive to live in California. And so with that comes people moving to Arizona and moving to Phoenix. And with that comes,
they bring their culture.
They bring their cultures, and they bring their collections, you know, and that's why we keep seeing.
So have you ever had someone come to the trade counter and they're like, oh, I'm from here, and I just want to get rid of this?
Constantly. I've even had guys that have reached out and been like, hey, I live in Chicago. I have a collection of a couple thousand records. Would you be interested in coming out? And
you're,
that's
like,
always,
please,
yeah, huh? Exactly. Because, you know, the idea of what's on the East Coast and what's in the Midwest and what's in, you know, it's funny. Like, I've had people come and buy all the Elvis Presley and all the, you know, Frank Sinatra stuff. And those are big artists, and those are artists that'll always sell. But they kind of, you know, they might fall out of immediate popularity at some moments, but they'll be like, no, that, you don't understand. Like, in the East Coast, you don't see some of this stuff. Or in California right now, these are records that are selling out. No, you know, no problem. And so every market's different. And what's popular in those markets is always different as well. So
what's popular? Like, what do you see is popular right now here in Phoenix?
What's popular right now here in Phoenix? I mean, the neo soul thing continues to grow, you know, either between the reissues of stuff that was put out before, or the new soul singers, like we talked about earlier with the Daptones and the Coal Mines and stuff like that. That continues to grow in popularity. You know, alt rock and stuff like that is always still going to be popular. We're still going to sell things like Five Finger Death Punch and Disturbed,
really?
And stuff like that. Yeah, people still like
it. And I don't mean it in a bad way. I just feel like I personally don't ever. But
no,
maybe it's because I'm a little deeper into it.
I'm kind of in the same way, where
not,
it's not my cup of tea. Yeah. But, I mean, that's still wildly popular. I'm sure that's popular nationwide. That's not just a Phoenix thing. But those are still, you know, popular, and so people are still buying that. We sell a ton of, you know what's actually grown probably the most in the last couple of years has been rap and hip hop on vinyl. That's been the biggest kind of thing that I've seen really kind of take off in the last 2 years has been the Kanye on vinyl, the Drake on vinyl, and then the, you know, to the SoundCloud stuff, the Lil Ugly Mane and the, you know, Odd Future stuff. That sort of stuff is, it's pop music nowadays. That stuff sells constantly. And so, I mean, and we even saw that, you know, that's been trending that way since 2001. My, you know, Ja Rule and J-Lo and all of those songs from 2001 that were part of my...
I'm real, to loop it back.
Let's loop it all around. All five of those top five songs were all R&B kind of infused tracks. And so that's been trending that way for a long time, but that's still growing. It's still very much so growing, and we sell that sort of stuff all the time, and people are always asking about, you know, when does this come out? When does this come out? When does Pusha T on Pusha T Daytona come out on vinyl?
Well, I know Black Panther was a big one that people were like, wait, because we even had asked one of the guys at the record stores, we're like, hey, is this coming back out yet, the Black Panther? And he's like, on this date, man. He's like, I literally get like three people a day asking me that question.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, anything Kendrick touches is gold.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that guy's...
Y'all, thank you, Kendrick.
Thank you, Kendrick. He's an absolute monster. Damn was one of the best sellers of the year, one of the best records of the year.
So did the collector's edition sell really well, too? Because you know how Damn, and then, which is the collector's, is supposed to be, or I don't know.
You're talking about the, like, vinyl exclusive, the,
how it was
like,
supposed
online
to
exclusive?
Be?
The...
No, the one, so Damn was released, and then...
Oh, were you talking about the backwards?
Yes.
Yeah, where it was the
he
tracks
says it was
just...
supposed to, how it was intended,
yeah,
supposedly to be.
Yeah. To be honest, I really, it's...
I like it backwards better.
I did, too. Oh,
it's completely different.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, it completely changes the vibe, but I like them both ways.
I love things like that. I love when things can be reworked or just looked at in a different perspective, and it changes how you look at it and how you feel about it. And I that's why I think Kendrick is really just kind of one of these pioneering artists right now that is not only, you know, releasing material that's just fantastic, but he will re-release his record backwards, and it's like, wow, this
and
is
you still lose your
this
mind.
Is still great. And then he does the Black Panther soundtrack for a Disney soundtrack. I mean, that's Marvel, but it's Disney. And it's that good.
He crushed it.
That, I mean, that soundtrack's amazing. And so...
Well, like, I, because of that soundtrack, I went and listened to SOB, you know, SOBTD.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, oh, I actually like...
Right?
And they're, like, you know, Oakland kids and stuff like that. But I was like, okay, it's so that, like... And do you always naturally discover music that way? A lot of people, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know a lot of people said... Back in the day, they started listening to The Descendants because of Blink-182 and stuff like that.
100%. And that's why, you know, as much as physical media, you've got to push it, you know, whether you're buying it online or you're buying it in person, that matters. But, like, even something like streaming has a place and has a importance in the sense where you can listen to Spotify or listen to Apple Music and put on recommendations, and they can curate a playlist for you, and you can get exposed to music maybe that you wouldn't heard otherwise. That used to be the radio. You know, that's why you listen to the radio, was to get exposed to new music that you might not know otherwise. And so I do see value in the variety of ways that people get music nowadays. I think that there's, like anything, there's a balance and there's a moderation sort of thing. You know, you can't just only stream, because eventually you get to the point where you don't realize that, you know, there's artists making this music and they need money to survive and continue making music. If you want to, you know, there's stores out there that sell music that need people to go out and buy it in order to stay in business. And so, like, there's an ebb and a flow that's necessary to keep this culture going.
So do you think record sales, and just your opinion, just yourself, just do you think they're going to keep going up? They're going to think they're going to stay steady? Do you think
trending.
There's going to be a dip?
They're trending upwards. I mean, new vinyl records will for sure continue to grow, at least for the next couple years, I would imagine. I mean, it's as far as, like, that's how the trends are looking. But, I mean, it could always just...
Do you think it's going to go back to the $2 days ever, though?
Maybe, I suppose. I mean,
I kind of don't want it. Like,
I don't either. I think that, you know, it's funny because, you know, the reason I think records are so popular nowadays is because the majority of music is gained through streaming. You know, nowadays people don't buy CDs anymore. And so The record is the biggest physical format you can get of something. So it's the exact opposite of the digital or the stream, where it's not there's no physical presence for it. It's on your phone. It's on your computer. And so, you know.
You can take it wherever
you go. And so, like, when you want to actually physically own it, I don't want to just own a CD. I want to own the biggest fucking thing I could potentially own. And they could come out with, like, you know, stuffed animals or something like that. Or, like, and they kind of have in some regards, where you can buy, like, statues or something like that. And it comes with Cypress Hill, for instance, came out with, I forget which Cypress Hill record what it was, but it's a skull. That's really cool looking. It's got a pot leaf on the front of the skull and
Cypress
stuff like
Hills,
that.
Of
Cypress
Hill,
yeah, of course. And you open it up and it's just straight up the CD inside. And it's kind of like this gigantic, not porcelain, but like that, you know, sort of material. And it just has the CD inside. And so people are looking for different ways to represent that they like something. People are looking for different ways to listen to stuff. And so, you know, for records in particular, I think that they went out for so long. There was that 10-year lull where it really kind of went out, if not more. And now for it to come back, it's because it's the biggest possible format you can have. And it's also, you know, you can watch the record spin. You can, it's a very personal experience that you can't get with other formats.
Well, and that's what I say to people too, because we, you know, like to play music for people. Like, yeah. Well, like we went to Zia or we go to the cafe and stuff. And there's a different element to that too, where you actually share it with other people.
Yeah.
Where it changes your relationship with how you view music, how you consume it.
100%.
And things like that. Like when I was playing at Zia, I was playing some R&B, but I noticed I was getting more response to the hip hop rap that I was playing. So
yeah,
I continued
Andrew
to play
mentioned
more of
that. That works at the store, said that the hip hop in particular.
So like, that's why then I was like, you know what? Let me just keep playing that, because I brought a bunch of stuff, because I'm like, I don't know. Like, I like all this music in my box, but I don't know what everybody else is going to like. So let me gauge it. Let me play and see what's going on. So once I saw people were showing more positive reaction to that, and I like all the music in my box, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna throw that on instead.
Totally.
So that's what I played, and people were responding. And like I said, there's that gentleman that actually
came up and said, what CD is this?
Literally
on?
Had Tell every single Biggie CD, and they're like, that song that you played, which is one of these CDs. I'm like, Born Again, right there. That's the one. That's the one you're gonna buy. And he's like, thank you. His name is Bernard. So I don't think he's listening, because he's a much older gentleman. But thank you, Bernard. He
Shout
was
out.
So sweet.
Shout out
nice.
To Bernard.
Shout out to Bernard.
Nardog.
Nardog. Yeah, exactly.
No, you know, Nardog on the prowl for Biggie CDs.
Nardog as the Thunderbird. So is there anything else you wanted to say or put out there for all the collectors or anyone just getting into it, or even the old timers, or anything? Just you want to
just start somewhere. I mean, it is my big, if you're first starting out, just start somewhere. Start with what you like, and then be open to the idea of finding new music. Shop the dollar bins. You know, every store has cheapy records. Start there. You know, it doesn't have to be the $30 pressing of something on 180 gram vinyl. Not only will it not play on your cheap turntable, which is nothing, there's nothing wrong with starting cheap. Everyone should be able to start at an entry level position and move up from there. So, you know, but start, you know, start somewhere. Start somewhere and let it go from there. You know, realize, is this something I actually am passionate about? Is this something I actually want to do? And if it's not, then, you know, like any other hobby, get out of it. You know,
sell it to
any other record store, or come bring it to Zia, bring it to the trade counter. We'll help you out right now. You know, I always come back to the last Gil Scott-Heron record, where I opened it up and on the inner sleeve it said, put this record on your turntable and listen to it. Don't do something else. Don't pull out your phone. Don't pull out a book or something like that. Sit down and listen to the music. And if you don't like it, go take it back to the record store you bought it and sell it back to them and get something else. And that is something that there's something very pure about that, as far as like music is meant to be enjoyed. You know, as much as I understand collecting for monetary reasons and stuff like that, collect because you love music. Collect because you love what you're listening to. And if you don't like it, then sell it and buy something else.
There's so much stuff out there.
There's so much. There's endless amounts. And especially today and day, we talked about re-releases and stuff like that. There's something being re-released or something new coming out every single week. And so, you know, get into it. And if you like it, you know, explore it, have fun with it. It definitely is a lot of fun. I mean, I've enjoyed it for the last, you know, 12 years of my life, as far as actually actively collecting records. And it's brought a lot of joy to my life, and it's brought, you know, a lot of fun. So start somewhere, go from there, for the, you know, the older collectors that are upset about the way the market's gone, you know, get over it.
let everyone have fun and enjoy it. Like, you want to complain that people don't appreciate things nowadays? Well, you know what? They're appreciating
exactly. Yeah, it's funny because, like, they'll always complain about how people don't care about things anymore. And it's like, well, they actually care about something like this. So let them. Let them appreciate what you appreciated for a long time. I know it's changed how you get to buy stuff, and that's okay, but hopefully you're able to sell some stuff that you bought for kind of a cool markup. And, you know, you're able to make a little bit of money off that and buy some more records from there, too. So,
But before we go, I have a quick question. You worked at Trade Counter Idea, obviously.
For a long time.
What is your greatest find?
Greatest find is hard. I can tell you, just because it happened recently, and in fact I brought him up earlier, was Rodriguez. I was looking through a collection of about, 400, 500 records, and it was all easy listening, 50s big band sort of stuff. Lots of Glenn Millers, lots of Artie Shaws, lots of, polkas.
Was there any, what is it, Engelbert?
Humperdinck.
Humperdinck. Humperdinck.
Humperdinck.
That's what it was called.
Wait, all right, what is it? Al Martino?
Al Martino. That's it. That's the on-running joke is that
when we dig Barbara together. Streisand. When we dig together, we'll be looking and we're like, oh my God. Go ahead, put this in the keep pile. And we look at it, and it's fucking Engelbert or Al Martino. And we're like, God, I hate you.
She'll have me an Engel dick, and I'll be like, fuck, man, fuck this guy. I want to know what this guy looks like. So we finally see what he looks like. He looks like a freaking...
He's a good-looking guy. Yeah, I can understand why he was popular for so long. Yeah,
big old sideburns.
Yeah, exactly. So I understand why he was as big as he was. But no, in that record collection was a Rodriguez Cold Fac original pressing.
Just one.
And it was the one record in that entire collection that stood out. And the guy was a truck driver, and he's like, oh, yeah, I remember when I bought that from a truck stop in freaking Missouri. And he was like, it's pretty good. It's just like,
this is a
$300 record. Like, and so, like, that was probably one of the coolest things that I found.
And those
recently.
Are the things, like you're saying, when
it keeps you digging, keeps you going, it keeps you.
What's in there?
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna start, and you're gonna, this is all stuff I don't wanna look through. And I'm like, but I'm gonna look all the way to the back just in case that last record is something I've been looking for. As I've gotten more into jazz and soul stuff like that, there's always, I find myself getting really excited about finding anything jazz and soul. So, it's hard to say exactly besides that Rodriguez as far as
recently. What about interesting? What's the most interesting? Just like oddball, or have you come across anything that's like that?
I mean, we're always finding cool stuff. Alice Coltrane, original pressings. I forget her name, but she's a harp player that released a Blue Note record. That was another really cool find that was just in a dollar bin, and we found it, and it's like a $90 record. But just, for me, it's finding stuff that I actually want to listen to. And it's funny because, like, even someone like Dionne Warwick, you'll find so many Dionne Warwick records. She's got some cuts. She's got some tracks that are incredible. Donna Summer is another one where you find her records all the time.
Anything disco too, it's so
disco's back.
It's
too.
Back, and for a long time, people did not. They would talk shit.
Oh yeah, and there's still. I mean, disco culture is a different thing.
Yes,
than the disco
music.
Exactly. And punk is always better than disco. Let's be honest. But there's so much cool stuff out there. And I found a ton of cool stuff. But yeah, it's even finding those cool tracks on those records that you wrote off for a long time.
Like the Bee Gees was something Bee Gees. When I was younger that I was like, oh gosh. And then Bee Gees. As I got older, I was like, I love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, recently I just listened to Michael Jackson's Off the Wall, and I hadn't listened to it in years.
Such a good record.
And I listened to it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, like, these other tracks that I thought,
it's not just the hits,
Yeah, I'm like, these other tracks are so much better than those fucking hits. Yep. Those bass lines were ridiculous. Yep. Like, they're so much better. I'm like, I haven't listened to it in years. I haven't listened to that album. So I'm still looking for it in our collection over here. I can't find it. It's somewhere in
the wall of wax that's currently on the walls behind us somewhere.
Yeah, it's somewhere back there. But that's so when you were mentioning something... So it brings up another question I have asked you before we go. So some people who dig, they dig specifically not for, they love music and stuff. They like what they like. But when they dig for value. Like, how much is this?
And I've even said that a couple times where I'm like, oh, yeah, I found this record and it's worth this much money.
Which is exciting.
It is exciting, but there's a difference. And do you see that with collectors now? Because there's a resale market, obviously.
Well, there's tools like Discogs, and, you know, you can value a record immediately in the palm of your hand. I mean, it was part of your, you know, Crate Digger starter pack as far as Discogs. I mean, there's tools out there that people, when they do dig now, it's not just, oh, I recognize this record label or I recognize this artist or something like that, or look on the back and be like, oh, you know, I know this the members of the band, or I know this producer or something like that. There is this immediate, I can tell you how much this record's actually worth. And so, yes, it's changed how people dig. They don't take chances, I think, in the same way they used to, because all the information they need is in the palm of their hand. But people still, I mean, like, especially, that's why I always pitch the dollar records to the new collector, the person who's just looking into getting into music, is because there's good stuff in there. Just because it's not worth more than a dollar doesn't mean that the quality of music and the actual music then on there isn't worth so much more than that personally to somebody who's listening to it.
Yeah, because there's people out there who'll be like, oh, you know, this is a $300-$400 record. I'm like, that's cool.
That's exciting.
That's super exciting.
I'm sorry, but you even said it's nice to stunt. You say
sometimes. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with flexing.
Oh my gosh,
pools.
Yeah. I mean, that's like collecting anything. I mean,
yeah, but, and so the whole thing about it is like, you know, I can pull out something I got for 50 cents that's just as good quality music. May not be as rare.
Mm-hmm.
Or a sought after, but it's still the same. But in, for me, in value of music,
yeah.
Or it may be a better song than that, in my opinion.
Like 45s especially.
45s especially are, you know, that's a totally different ballgame, as we've talked about so many different times. Say, collecting 45s, 45 collectors are just different.
They're different people. They really are.
Have you guys ever looked into 78 collecting? Now that's like,
no,
deep abyss.
I was talking.
There's a really great book if you Do Not Sell at Any Price. Yeah,
you're the one who lent it to me.
Yeah, that's another. It's a really cool just perspective. It's not complete. There's issues with it, but it's just a kind of cool insight into the mindset of record collecting, specifically with 78s. But the idea that, you know, something is worth potentially a priceless amount because of the amount that's out there and what it means to that one person. And so, yes, no, I think that, you know, I just like the music that I like. It's cool to know that something you have is worth something. It's cool to look at your Discogs and be like, my collection's worth this much money. There's a dollar amount directly.
We have a Discogs, but we don't have even cataloged because
it's just
time consuming.
It's a lot. It, you know, I've had some fun with it. It's been kind of a fun, you know, kind of like digitizing CDs that I used to do for a long time, as far as like getting CDs and putting them onto a hard drive and stuff like that. That's kind of the cataloging my collection on Discogs has kind of fulfilled that same void as far as taking my record collection or my music collecting to another level.
We should, though, because there, you know how it is, like sometimes you have so much stuff that you forget what you have, and then I'll buy something and I'm like, oh, I already had that.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't need to buy it, but whatever. So.
Do we have this?
There's so many collectors too that, like, for the longest time had lists, and like I still have like a guy who will come and he just shops Blu-rays. He doesn't do music, he does movies, but he would come with his laptop and he would just like sift the bins, but he'd have his laptop in his hand because he didn't want to buy something twice. And then he has his lists of things that he was looking for, and it's just like, you can probably put that on your phone.
Yeah.
And specifically when it comes to record collecting, there are things like Discogs that you can, you know, it's in the palm of your hand as far as finding that out. But no, music's what it's worth to the person who's listening to it. That's where the value really comes. It comes from somebody enjoying the record. And even the value, I mean, supply and demand will always dictate why something is worth hundreds of dollars.
Like you're saying, why it was $2 versus $30 potentially now, and yep. or more, or so on yep. and so forth.
Yeah,
and
the demand is that much higher and supply is decreasing.
So when an artist passes away, do you really see an uptick in sales?
Immediately. Tom Petty was one of those that, you know, his records were, you know, arguably $10 records before he passed away. Now there is not a shadow of a doubt that they're worth $10 to $20 at least. Trying to think of the one previously, Michael, you know, obviously his records continue to go up in value. I'm trying to think who was
Prince.
Yes. Another one that, you know, his records were still, you know, $10 records, but now they're $20 records and $30 records.
Well, did you see any uptick with when Chester from Linkin Park passed away?
People love Linkin Park. You know, I kind of mentioned the alt rock thing earlier, as far as like that still sells, the Mike Shinoda stuff. That CD sold really well, and we ordered, I ordered a ton of his record because people love that, you know, that style of music. And yes, when Chester passed away, you definitely saw kind of a run on that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And do you have like a personal grail that like you just don't have, or not really, because you just.
Personal grail. You know what? It's funny. For the longest time, it was I just wanted that first pressing of that Duran Jones and the Indications record. And then I got it. My some friends of mine bought it for me for my birthday, which was sweet. Really sweet. And that was, it wasn't a grail, but it was on my want list for a long time.
You really just wanted it.
I wanted it. And, but I couldn't justify I had the repress, and I couldn't justify just shelling out for that first pressing. I'm not a big color fanatic. It's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool. I mean, it's always like a nice addition, but it's not, I don't lose sleep over, you know, not having that first version of it. Audio quality wise, I'd like to have the best sounding quality, so I will buy multiple copies of the same record if I'm getting a different audio experience. That,
like,
Baby,
we're talking about with the Maggot Brain.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that Baby Huey record that got re-released. I bought that even though I have an original pressing, and I have a repress of it even, because it was said that that was the best sounding version of that record. So I was like, well, I'm gonna buy it again. Not because it, you know, was the jacket was super cool or anything like that. It did come with instrumentals, which was really neat. But I bought it because I wanted to hear that record again. I wanted to hear it in a different way. I wanted to hear the different, you know, audio quality of that record. So, do I have a grail? Oh boy.
Or is there anything you regret
really
not buying?
Should. Yes.
Plenty of stuff. There's two things to me that totally just stick out in my mind that I regret, and they're not even have anything. There's a Vincent Price record.
Yeah.
And then the other one was at Record Room when it was still in Scottsdale. They had like the Seance record.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. Yeah. And I was like, I'll go back. And I never went back. And I was like, I regret it every day. It was so fucking cool.
That sounds awesome.
Do you remember that?
The Seance is all 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah, it was just this fucking random.
It was just
like,
the most random.
It was so cool.
Shit. It was so
math.
Dope. Yeah.
Jazz stuff. I mean, seeing what I saw when it was $2 and when it was $5 and when it was $10 and being like, oh, that's $1,000 record. You know, yes. In that regard, there are some things that I regret not picking up just when the market was what it was. But no, not really. I always kind of keep looking forward and keep looking, you know, looking for the next cool find that I'm going to have. And, you know, for grails and stuff like that, I really feel like I should have an answer for that.
I think it's one of those because we put you on the spot and you're
no,
like,
no, yeah, I know. But I do have, you know, I'd have to pull up my want list and see what's on there as well. There's a bunch of stuff that I would love to get my hands on, but nothing that immediately comes to mind.
Quick sidebar. Yeah. You mentioned the best sounding. Do you think that 180 gram and Reaper, you know, digitally mastered, that's what we talked about last week, and what we had talked about earlier, is it an original analog repress, or is it a digital repress? Do you think there's an actual difference in the sound from digital to analog, or 180 gram and stuff like that?
Well, the 180 gram thing for me specifically is due to the resilience of the record. Susceptible to warping and stuff like that. That obviously plays a big factor. Deeper grooves, you know, that obviously matters for frequency and the dynamics of the audio. So yes, all of those factors do matter, and they matter immensely to people that have $1,000 record players and $1,000 Macintosh receivers and incredible speaker systems and stuff like that. Not so much if you're in that mid to entry level range and you just want to enjoy music. And that's kind of where I'm at. I've got a Thorns turntable at home that I love, and I've got some nice speakers and a nicer, you know, Pioneer receiver at home, but not, you know, you can hear bad pressings. There's 100% bad pressings that were, you know, not even from an original source. It was from it might as well have been from a tape or another record that somebody re-recorded from that record.
From the iPod?
No, that exists. That happens.
Yeah,
and
bootlegs.
It's funny.
They said that there's the really good Kanye bootlegs before 808 and Heartbreaks, but I've never.
Oh, and there's even all
on.
the Frank Ocean stuff. Like, those are all bootlegs.
Yeah, I
and
want
stuff
Nostalgia
like that.
Ultra.
I know.
Now
I want
that you mentioned
and stuff like
now
that.
That.
I want
that.
All
I want
of those
that.
Records, but they're bootlegs. You know. But it's fun. It's the enjoyment of listening to that stuff. Yes, there's a difference in quality. I don't think that's undeniable. Unfortunately, does that quality really matter? Only if you have the equipment to support
it. And that's what I said in the last episode. 180 gram isn't magic.
No, no. And if anything, like we said earlier, unfortunately, if you have a cheaper record player, it won't, it, like, it literally, it
doesn't make a fucking, if you have a Crosley, no,
it,
in comparison,
it will hurt
to
your playback because it's too heavy for the platter. And so it's funny how those are the turntables that are most easily available. And most of the, you know, if somebody wants to buy a turntable and then they want to buy Fall Out Boy or 1975 or 21 Pilots on vinyl, and it's a 180 gram pressing, and it won't play well on their turntable because it's too heavy. And so it is kind of funny in that regard, where they're just in direct opposition of each other. I know, right? So many times
I'm bringing this back because it just
January
doesn't work.
First, and they're like, I got this for Christmas. And
have you actually had people, like, you've had to explain to them
all the time? And I'm like, okay, so listen, here's what it is. The record's too heavy. Your turntable's too cheap.
Put a penny on that goddamn tone arm.
Exactly. Try and figure out a way that you can do it. As it gets closer to the inside of the record, it'll play better. But, you know, it is funny that's the big wave, that it's got to be 180 gram, and it's got to be – that's the only mark of quality that, you know, it's got to be 180 gram. And I do think that it matters. You want to have records that, you know, will stand the test of time, you know. And so I like the idea, and for people that have nice turntables, it's not an issue or anything like that, and they sound great. But it's just kind of funny that that's what's immediately available for everybody.
You want that hype sticker.
Yeah, exactly.
You want that gold sticker on there.
180 gram quality. Virgin vinyl.
Remastered virgin vinyl.
Well, because him and I were saying, we try to get, like, from the OG stuff, like stuff from, like, the 70s or, like, collect a funk or soul. We collect that. We try to get the original because there's nothing like that analog recording,
yeah,
and
exactly.
All that other stuff.
That's how when it came out,
it was intended,
the artist
to
wanted
sound.
You to hear it. And so that's important to me as well. That's the experience that they wanted you to listen to. And I just bought a collection of stuff on like Wednesday from a couple out in Scottsdale, Leland, nice old couple in their 80s, but just amazing people. And we started talking about just record collecting and the quality of music and stuff like that. And I forgot where I was going with that entirely. Completely forgot what we were saying. What were we saying before that?
What were you saying, Penn?
We're talking about buying original copies.
Because we're talking about how the artist intended for you to listen to it.
Nope. Still don't know
where
I was going with that.
Well, what?
No, that's where I was going with that. We're going to edit that out, right?
Yeah, we actually can.
We definitely can. But we're not, because it was priceless.
I know, and that never happens to you, right? Honestly,
I know, right?
Never.
I know.
It's
right?
All good.
Well, we want to say thank you for listening. Thank you to Brett for coming on and talking to us.
Of course.
Thank you to Zia for really contributing to keeping the culture alive here in the Valley, especially.
Of course. And, I mean, we're part of it. I mean, we're not the culture of the record community. We just want to be part of it.
Exactly.
And so we love not only being a part of it, but contributing to the community. You know, we like the idea that there's other record stores in town. We participated in a couple things like record store crawls, where you can go between all these different stores. And I'm just excited that record collecting and music is popular. I like the idea that people can go to a physical store and browse for music. It was super important to me when I was growing up, and I love the idea that it's still something that people do today.
I agree. What about you?
I completely 100% agree.
Totally.
And you can, if you want to keep up with all of Zia's current stuff, you can follow him. It's at Zia Records, right?
Yes. Yeah. Zia Records on Instagram, Zia Records on Facebook, Zia Records on Twitter.
On pretty much anything.
Anything and everything. I think we have a Tumblr too. ZiaRecords.com, though.
Zia,
yeah,
Records.
Definitely check it out. Yep.
Okay. And then our Instagram, like we said, we just changed it to Just Keep Spinning Podcast, and our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, pretty much anywhere, right?
Yeah, right now we're pretty much anywhere. Spotify is a new one that we...
Oh, yes.
We're
Spotify.
Really
we're
trying to put.
We got on Spotify.
On Spotify. Hey.
You can do Spotify podcasts.
You type us in. We're fucking there.
We're there. You'll see us.
We're in the mix.
Come
on
see
Spotify.
Just Keep Spinning playing at,
yes,
Zia Camelback this Friday.
Yeah, we'll be there hanging out.
7 o'clock.
Exactly.
I'm going to play a different set.
I'm excited to hear
Yes,
it.
Different set. We'll different play different set.
Quick note. I want to shout out another local podcast here, Sneak Dis. They're one of the podcasts that we drew ideas from for a lot of stuff we do on our show. So I just wanted to shout them out real quick because I was talking
to Greg.
I enjoy their I've always enjoyed listening to their podcast.
Greg is so nice. Yeah. He's such a
nice guy. So shout out to them.
And George too.
George too.
And well, I guess that's it. Like I said, just keep spinning and don't stop digging. Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, guys.